What's up, and welcome to NExpress PopOptic.com's Nintendo podcast. With me, as always, is Aaron Santos.
Kanbawa, mina-san.
And Ricky D.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Aaron. Hello, world.
Thanks again for joining us, everyone out there, for the second full week of PopOptic.com. If you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or any other source other than the website, go check out PopOptic.com. It is awesome and worth a look. I am loving every second of it so far.
Check us out on our Facebook page. I created a Facebook page, I think it was like late last week, so I haven't really had much of a chance to promote it, but we're hoping to get a few people to like us on our Facebook page. I mean a Facebook page for the podcast, not for the website.
Yeah, it's a great way to connect with us. Let us know what you're thinking, what you'd like to hear us talk about. We're very open to suggestion. So this week's Nintendosage is going to be all about the very recent news that Fox is developing a Mega Man movie. And we are already debating, what does that even mean? Like, we have no idea whether it's what game it's going to be based around, because how many Mega Man games are there? I mean, outside of the numbered Mega Man games, there are like infinite Mega Man games.
That is true.
So what is this movie, do you guys think?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I actually wrote up an article over at popoptic.com, and I try my best to shy away from writing up rumors or anything that's not necessarily confirmed from some sort of trustworthy source. Mm-hmm. But this came from a very good source, so I decided to write up the article. And the reason why I think it's a good source is because they actually specifically named four people who are in charge of producing this movie, three of which are the people responsible for producing, for example, the Planet of the Apes movies, like the recent batch of Planet of the Apes movies, which I'm a huge fan of. I think those movies are amazing. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that they did such an amazing job with the CGI in those movies. So I can't imagine a studio like Fox wanting to make an animated Mega Man movie, because although, you know, animated films do make a lot of money, like look at Pixar, for example, or Minions, DreamWorks, etc., etc., mm-hmm. I just think that they're going to want to make it live action. I can easily imagine a Mega Man movie, like when we think of all of the popular like franchises that have been hosted over on Nintendo consoles, like, for example, Legend of Zelda, Super Mario series, and so on and so forth, like even Metroid. I think the Mega Man series is the one I can envision on the big screen. Like, I don't think it'll be too difficult for them to make this movie. I mean, just look at the Power Rangers movies, for example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of story, I don't know if you've ever read the comic books, but the story within the Archie comics is actually really amazing. And it sort of follows the story within the games, dating all the way back to the very original game, Mega Man, released, of course, on the NES, mm-hmm. way back in the mid-80s. But they just do a really good job in fleshing out the character. So I can imagine sort of like a mix between taking the traditional mythology of Mega Man from the core game series, like forget about all the spin-offs and whatnot, just talking about the original series, specifically those first six games, and then taking bits and pieces from the comic book, and yeah, you have yourself a Mega Man movie. I mean, don't even think about it like a video game adaptation. Think of it as a comic book adaptation. As we all know, comic book movies are super popular these days. Mm-hmm. And so you have the comic book from Archie Comics, the Mega Man comics, and that is pretty much the storyboards. Like, they can just look at those comics, much like if you're not aware, you know, before they make movies, most studios, most directors, most filmmakers have artists that produce storyboards. And so the end result is supposed to mirror what's drawn on paper. So it's basically like a comic book, right? Mm-hmm. Almost everyone does this in the business because it gives an idea of what it's supposed to look like. Because, you know, you have the lighting guy, the cinematographer, the gaffers, the editor, the cameraman, the actors, and so on and so forth. So you got to, like, provide your crew with some sort of, you know, like hand-drawn and or sketch and or something of what you want your frame to look like what you want your set to look like. So what I'm trying to say here is that if they are going to draw from the comic book, it makes total sense.
Yeah, and I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, Mega Man has a huge following. I mean, he's not exactly like he's well known. He's not Mario, he's not Link or Zelda, but you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, Like, and also think of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, just the idea of making a movie that takes place in space, you know, with like these sort of like characters, I think it's the way to go. If you're going to choose one video game that's featured on Nintendo consoles and you're going to try to make a big screen adaptation of it, then I would start with Mega Man and not touch like The Legend of Zelda and or Mario and or Metroid right away, because you want to make sure you do it right. So if you screw up, it's just Mega Man. It's really a Capcom-owned franchise. You know what I mean?
Well, they, yeah, you know, they got Resident Evil still going.
Yeah.
They need to have Devil May Cry. That's what they should do.
Yes, you know, that would be a good movie.
But that's a different discussion. Yeah. I would love every second of that, but that's a different discussion.
I'd believe that.
You see, I think we should do this next week. I think next week we should come prepared and each of us pitches one video game that we want to see on the big screen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Maybe like one Nintendo and one other, so that we can get like the entire video game World Cup.
Yeah.
But what do you think visually? I mean, you talked about Guardians of the Galaxy, but at least that comic's based in realism, so a lot of the art's going to be like semi-realistic. With Mega Man, he's very cartoony. So, what age do you picture Mega Man even being, and how do you picture his armor? That's where I have the biggest questions.
Exactly. Like I'm having a hard time picturing, I don't know why, it's just I'm having a hard time picturing Mega Man in the movie though. Like obviously he has to be CG animated, or would you guys rather see like a fleshed out actor portraying
Mega Man? I think
they
could do a mix of both. Really? Like I really think they could do a mix of both. Like you know, what movie? Oh, Speed Racer. You ever see Speed Racer?
You know, what? It's because it's funny. The first thing I thought was Speed Racer. And then...
Okay, well, Speed Racer was the first movie in which it was all shot in a studio. So everything in that movie is computer generated.
Yes.
Except for maybe, like, of course, the people. Like, the backgrounds, I think even to some extent, the costumes, the cars, the car chases, everything is created in the computer. I honestly think Speed Racer is an incredible movie. We actually just posted our list of the 50 greatest comic book movie adaptations on our website. So check it out. Speed Racer made the cut. I think it's like about halfway through the list, like number 25 or something. Wow. That is an incredible movie. And when I think of Mega Man, I think of Speed Racer.
Yeah, for some reason, before you mentioned Speed Racer, like I pictured... you know, Mega Man, but for some reason I made the correlation to Speed Racer because like you said, everything is CG. I mean, that's the only way you could take the Mega Man into. It's like it has to be completely CG.
Yeah. Totally lighthearted too, which is what Speed Racer really captured.
Totally. And I think you just need the right actor. I mean, I think it would have to be someone young. I'm not talking about like a 12-year-old, but maybe a 16-year-old. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I can't think of who I would cast, but yeah, I could totally see them making a big screen adaptation if they go the way of like Speed Racer. So yeah, and it can't be an animated series because they are releasing a new animated TV series, which is going to get released, I think, in 2017. So the rumor is that they're supposed to make this movie and they are aiming to release it side by side with the TV show. So why would you make a big screen animated feature length film if you have this brand new animated TV series? It has to be live action.
True.
Yeah. Plus it's Fox and I don't know any animated stuff they've ever done. So that's our honest predictions of this Mega Man film. What it'll actually come to, no one knows. So we will be on top of that and let you guys know first thing we hear. And in other news, it was confirmed that there is a Pikmin 4 game that is near the end of its development. This kind of blew my mind. I had no idea that Pikmin 4 was coming so soon. I think there was a pretty big gap between 2 and 3. So the fact that 4 is already here almost, that's pretty crazy.
Okay, so, but they say they're not sure if they're going to release it for the Wii U, and they might hold it for the NX platform.
Yeah.
If it's already almost done being developed, though, I would think that it's already being made for the Wii U.
Me too.
It might be cross-platform, though.
It could be, but it just feels like it's made for the Wii U, so you might as well release it for the Wii U. Like, why wait or why delay it for the NX? I mean, I'm sure they're going to have tons of big games released for the NX. Like, I don't know.
If we assume this is going to be cross-platform too, so we could safely say that the Game Pass is still going to be useful with the NX.
I honestly think they're rushing the NX release. Like, I mean, we don't know when the console is going to get released, but I think even just the announcement of the NX was a big, huge mistake on their part. I think they did it because they felt pressured because they were announcing that they were making mobile games, so they didn't want people to think that they were giving up on the console business. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate because I think, like, I mean, guys, like, think about this. I mean, we're going to be reviewing Super Mario 3D World in 2 weeks. We're going to be reviewing Mario Maker next week. Mm-hmm. Those two games are going to be considered, in 10 years' time, two of the five best Mario games ever made, mm-hmm. I think. Like, we're going to talk about this in a few weeks when we list off our favorite games. Then you're going to have the new Zelda game, which is going to be amazing. Yeah. You know, you have Smash, which, like, the new Smash is, like, I think the best one in the series. Like, they have so many great games, and I'm wondering, like, when they do release the NX, if they release the NX, say, like, in a year and a half, 2 years' time, like, they're not going to be ready to give us one of these amazing big games, especially from the core franchises like Mario or Zelda. So what are we going to get? We're going to get Pikmin 4? Like, you might as well just focus on the Wii U. I love the Wii U. Keep focusing on the Wii U. They should launch the NX big. And when I mean big, they should launch the NX with a Zelda title and a Mario title and a Metroid title and a Mega Man title and then you name it, all within, like, the first, say, like, year of the console's release. Like, they have to go huge.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Pikmin 4, man, just release it on the Wii U. We need games on our Wii U.
Yeah.
So to really...
I can't imagine that the NX is coming out as soon as 2016 either.
No.
I mean, no. I think they're just announcing it to reassure people that they're still in the console market.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a reassurance, if anything. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, it's almost becoming industry standard where you can announce something and then never give a release date or pull a Square Enix and be like, we'll announce when the release date is in a couple months. With, like, they just did that with Final Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm. I was like, are you serious? Like, you just scheduled a release date announcement. Really?
Yeah, like, but they've always done that, though.
Yeah, and so it's like, but that's very standard now. Look at Sony's E3 presentation. Like, nothing came out this year. Like, I was just at PAX. They had nothing to play. No offense to anyone at Sony, but they didn't bring anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's the thing about the NX. It's so unlike Nintendo. Like I said, they felt pressure to give us this news because of the announcement of mobile games. Mm-hmm. Nintendo's never really made an announcement of making a console, but not telling us when it's going to get released, if it's going to get released, what kind of console it's going to be, or anything. Like, I mean, it's always a big surprise, but it's also a big surprise because we don't even see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because they always kept a very closed door to what they've been planning. But I think, like, they're probably under pressure because of, like, the transparency other companies seem to have with the public, and I guess they forced Nintendo's hand at that in the matter.
I think that we're also neglecting the fact that Club Nintendo was being erased at the same time, and they wanted people to know that the new program, whatever it's going to be, whatever we're about to get on all of our devices, is also going to include the next thing, so we don't have to worry about, like, whatever we're about to get being erased again, because I'm sure that would be a legitimate fear for many people.
Yeah.
If a new console's about to launch. So I think they probably did have to clarify that, especially since they wanted to get rid of Nintendo.
You know what Nintendo should do before E3 next year? They should actually have, like, a big sort of, like, digital event where they make these big announcements. So when it comes to E3, they don't have to feel pressure with competing with Sony and Microsoft, and they can just focus on showing us the gameplay.
Do you remember the announcement of the Wii U?
The announcement of the Wii U, well, it was Project Cafe at first.
Yeah, and then they announced it on a Sunday evening the week before E3.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they had the entire presentation to just talk about games, which saved a ton of time, just having a 30-minute presentation before E3 started on the brand new console. I thought that was probably the best way to do it.
The problem with the Wii U is just a name. Like, a lot of people still to this day, we talk about this each and every single week, they don't understand that the Wii U and the Wii are two different consoles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem with the Wii U is it boils down to bad marketing, but I totally agree. Like, announcing the Wii U a week before E3 was kind of like a smart move.
Yeah. Sweet. So let's go ahead and take a brief break. We'll be right back for our main event, a discussion of Super Mario Galaxy.
Rated E for everyone.
Welcome back to N Express, where we are at our main event, a discussion of possibly one of the greatest Mario games. Undoubtedly one of the greatest Mario games of all time. Possibly the best Mario game of all time, which is really saying something, especially in my book. And that is Super Mario Galaxy. It's so high up there, it's hard not to just lose your mind with excitement when talking about it. I'm so glad we're finally here. I've been looking forward to this particular discussion since the very beginning.
So you've been more excited to talk about Super Mario Galaxy as opposed to Super Mario 64?
Yeah, see, wow. Super Mario 64 is such, like, it's revered, and I love it, but it's also a product of its time. Mm-hmm. And I think that of all Mario games, Super Mario Galaxy escaped its time and became timeless almost instantaneously. And I think that's a very, very rare quality in games.
I agree with you. I mean, even today, it's still like such a great game.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it took everything that was great about Mario 64 and made it so much better in Mario Galaxy.
Yeah. And I think that coming out of Sunshine, you all heard last week's discussion, I hope. If not, go listen to it. Don't expect anything great out of it, though. Because none of us were thrilled. So our expectations were immediately low. And then Mario Galaxy came and completely blew every expectation out of the water.
Yeah.
And it could have done that even if Sunshine was the best game ever. It still could have done that because this game was unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
It's like mastery of 3D Mario platforming.
Yeah.
Still issues with the camera, though.
With the what?
The camera.
Oh, my God. I totally disagree.
Really? I had problems with it. Some areas, okay. I'm not completely saying that the camera system is bad, but there are some areas where like the camera got stuck behind a rock and I lost track of Mario.
Really, not me.
Really,
I've been okay. So here's the thing. So I started playing this game about 4 days ago, thinking that I would complete it before the podcast because I remember it not being like the most difficult Super Mario game.
No,
I'm just a bit more than halfway through the game. I think I have 40 stars, and that's. That I'm not talking about 100% completing the game, but just getting like the 60 so I can do test out all the levels and, you know, sort of like finish the game. So I have like 40 stars. I've been playing the game, and after bitching and complaining about the camera system in Super Mario Sunshine and Super Mario 64, I got to tell you, it was so refreshing and so relaxing and so peaceful. I'm going to use the word peaceful here. I felt at peace playing this game because I just like laid back. Had my nunchuck and my Wii controller just played this game without any stress. And I've had a very stressful week, and this game, I think, saved my life. Like, I needed to go back to this game to play it.
Even in the water level?
The water level. Oh, my God. I wanted to talk about this. The water level.
Wait, are you going
to
say you like the water level?
Okay. Now, I talked about this 2 weeks ago on the podcast, and I think I said that no matter what video game, underwater levels are usually boring because you leave the core mechanics behind and you lose the special abilities and or basic abilities of the character you're playing because they are basically swimming around in this water level. In this game, it's so much smoother and easier to control him than it is in any Mario game before. So even the underwater levels was a breeze. Like, you know, there's like one level where you have to destroy the eels, the giant eels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was so simple. You just pick up a shell, chase after the eel, and then throw it at the eel. It was so easy. Whereas in the previous games, like, you know, Mario 64, there's some incredible, ingenious levels that take place underwater, like the levels with the pirate ship and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so time consuming, and I feel like he moves so slow that I just can't wait to finish those levels. I can get back to, say, TikTok Clock Land, whatever it's called, and or, you know, some of the other great levels in that game. In this game, there isn't very much underwater levels to begin with. I think there's like two that I think that I can remember that I've played recently in the past 4 days. The thing I love about this game, so first of all, the camera system, I don't think it's at all a problem. I mean, Mario can, of course, walk in any direction, left, right, upside down. Like, I mean, like at times I feel like my head's like tilting. Like,
I was gonna say that. I was getting a bit of motion sickness a couple of times.
Well, I'm actually afraid of heights, and so when I play Mario Galaxy, one of the thrills is being on a ledge and or being in like the middle of like the galaxy and not sure if you're gonna fall over if you walk over the ledge and or if it's just gonna like bring you to the other side, right? And that's kind of like I can't explain it. It's not like a fear, but it's kind of like just kind of like I'm never certain, and it took a while to get used to it. But
well, it's like getting vertigo, right? Because like sometimes you lose focus on what side you're actually looking at. There's some levels where that takes place indoors,
yeah,
and then you just kind of forget what's up and what's down.
Yeah, but I honestly did not have one single problem with the camera system playing this game in the past four days. Like, well, I'm not gonna say that it's not possible that there could be a moment or two where the camera might get stuck behind a rock.
Yeah, no, it's possible. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not saying that the camera system is like atrocious. I'm not saying that this is Super Mario 64 or Sunshine. I'm saying like there's a couple of, let's just say, stumbles in the camera system, but it's nothing that takes you out of the experience, that's for sure.
See, I don't remember having any sort of camera issues throughout the entire game.
You know what I completely forgot about, though? Because when we talk about costumes and power-ups, we always go back to Super Mario 3 and or Super Mario World. I completely forgot how many power-ups this game has. It has 9 power-ups, special costumes. Can I just remind everyone that Mario turns into a Boo?
Like, yeah, so good.
That is my favorite part of the whole entire game. I completely forgot about how you have to save Luigi by turning into a Boo in order to get through the jail bars. Love it.
What a great reference that they're already linking Luigi and Boos together.
Yeah. And then there's, of course, the Bee Mario, which is maybe
the best Mario since, I would say Tanuki, but I would offend someone here, so I'm going to say since Cape.
Okay.
I don't know if I would call it the best.
It's like, he looks great. It's totally different. I remember like buzzing around doing his little like lifty jumping and then also being able to stick to the honeycombs. Sure, it's like only useful on a couple of levels, but the fact that it does more than just one simple trick, like it's not just like, oh, you fly a little bit. The fact that it's like you can like buzz around and you can stick to these walls, and that like develops a full new way to do these 3D puzzles.
Well, that was
brilliant.
That's the thing about this game that makes it so amazing. Like, the level designs are incredible, the visuals are incredible, the art direction is incredible. But the thing about these levels is, unlike previous Mario games, there's like an obstacle in each course, but you go through so many different motions and have to use so many different abilities to get to the very end. Like, you might need to rely on wall jumping, and then you'll have to turn into a bee, and then you'll have to solve a puzzle in order to get through a moving obstacle, and then, you know, I don't know what. Like, it just, there's like this incredible transformation within each level that Mario has to go through in order to complete the goal and task. And I just like replaying this game again. Like, it's funny because we are going to have to eventually decide in a couple of weeks what the best Mario platformer is. And I got to tell you guys, this is slowly edging its way to the very top of the list because, again, like Super Mario 3, a game that I raved about a few weeks ago, that game, for its time, for what they can do based on the technology they had, I think that game is flawless. I think this game is flawless. The only nitpick I have with this game is, and it's not just with this game, it becomes a problem with each and every single Mario game after Mario jumped into like 3D form, is essentially like the coins are pretty much useless. Like, I still have to get each and every single coin, which is why it takes me so long to complete some of these levels, but they don't really do much. Like, it helps when you get hurt and it sort of like heals you, but you only need like one coin or like one or two or three coins to like heal yourself fully. But apart from that, you get hundreds of coins and they don't really do much because the one-ups come so easy. I mean, you know, you go back to the hub and you get a letter delivery from Peach, from Toad, And she's like, hey, how's it going, Mario? I'm still captured. I hope you're coming to rescue me. And by the way, here's 5 1-ups. Do you want them? Of course I want them. So, yeah, just the coins. Like, the ice flower, dude.
So cool. But I'm...
Yeah. The fire flower and the ice flower. And the fact that you need the ice flower in order to get through some levels, because, of course, it's all lava, and it's the only way you can skate over the lava. The rainbow star. There's all these, like, cool little things, like... For example, there's one level, I'm not entirely sure what you would call it, but it's sort of like this, it acts like a slingshot. It's like the sticky substance. So he sticks to it, and with the Wii remote, you pull back.
Yeah.
And you launch Mario. I don't know, I'm not entirely sure what you would call those things, but that's pretty cool. And I just love the fact that Mario can freeze water, and that's actually one of my favorite levels too, like, because you need to freeze the water fountains in order jump on the water in order to get over a ledge. I thought that was, like, ingenious. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's very, very... It seems like it's always been a part of Mario. It's so classic, and it feels essential to Mario.
For me, it would have to be the boss battles, too. I don't know. Did you guys like the boss battles?
Yes. These are the best boss battles Mario's ever had.
Yeah, I had to say, like, these were... The coolest boss battles ever in the Mario game. I mean, some of the stuff you have to do.
Well, here's the thing. So with Super Mario 64, one of my nitpicks was the boss battles, because you have to fight Bowser 3 times.
Yeah, some of them were lame too.
Yeah, it was lame. I mean, each and every single one of those times, you basically have to do the exact same thing, pick him up by the tail and throw him, right? So not only was it repetitive, but I just kind of felt like it was a little too easy and not very challenging. These boss battles are amazing. Like, do you remember the giant spider in space?
Yeah. Where you have to, like, slingshot?
Yeah. Like, that was incredible. I don't know if it's my favorite boss battles, because I still love the boss battles in Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. Like, those, to me, I think are, like, the highlight of boss battles for a Super Mario platformer. But I would put Mario Galaxy in second place.
See, that's a fair statement. I feel like Yoshi had so many great bosses. That was kind of one of the emphases of the game. It's just like these bosses that fit perfectly into the world. But I don't remember having any more fun than when I fought. I remember the boss's name, which is saying something. Boldergeist?
Yeah.
That boss was unreal cool. First of all, he's spitting black booze at you with yellow eyes. And those guys are rad. But then the boss himself is, like, a weird, like, ghost boulder? I don't even know. Hence, Bouldergeist. But it's such a, like, it's such a funny wordplay. He's such a fun design where you're, like, swinging these enemies back at him. And I thought that that was just completely different from any of the other bosses. It wasn't anything like the initial dragon fight. And it wasn't anything like the last final fight. It's just kind of its own in-the-middle-of-the-game boss fight that you never repeat anything like that.
Well, he actually comes back in the sequel because he's so popular. So he's essentially like a huge column of rocks that sort of make the shape of a face. And he is clearly the most memorable boss, I think, in Super Mario Galaxy, the first one. Mega Lake, that's his name. Mega Lake is awesome. Mega Lake is the giant, so not the spider that I was talking about previously. Mega Lake is a giant robotic sort of creature that looks like a spider, but he's only got 3 legs. Holy shit, that is one of the best boss battles.
Oh, okay, Mega Leg. The giant mech thing.
Yeah, okay.
I thought you were talking about the spider.
No, okay, so Mega Leg is a giant, whatever you call it, and the spider is Mandy Bugstack.
Okay,
so actually, you know what, I'm going to have to think about this. Maybe I will have to put this at number one for boss battles, if not for Bouldergeist and Mega Leg, but I still have this fondness for Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island. Like, I love the boss battles in that game. But you know what else I love about this game, too, is the hub. Because I wasn't a big fan of the hub in Sunshine. I wasn't a big fan of Sunshine to begin with. The hub in Super Mario 64 was fine, because it was essentially just a castle, and it was cool because it was... You know, you didn't have to really walk around too far or get lost or whatnot. But this just had so much personality to it. Like, you know, it was a giant castle, essentially. It was like, you know, there's like a bedroom, and there's the kitchen and the library. And I like the fact that if you go into the library, you can hear the story of Rosalina mm-hmm. and Luma, but you don't have to. So it's not forced on you. So although the game does have a few cutscenes at the beginning, like it does have sort of like, I guess, a 5-minute prologue, it isn't very long. And if you don't want to go into the library and hear Rosalina read out the story of her life to you, you don't have to. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's like they learned every single lesson from Sunshine. Like the prologue's really, really short.
Yeah.
the hub is pretty small, but there's still just enough to explore that you feel like you're discovering stuff. Mm-hmm. Like anytime you find a one up there, you're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. And it's like, it fits the aesthetic of the game perfectly, which they never get rid of the space aesthetic ever. Mm-hmm. Like it's always present. It's always, there's a friendly reminder that it's there.
And it's like every single
world is so unique and so well defined in itself mm-hmm. that even with those friendly reminders, even when you walk over to the ledge and you see just galaxies and stars off in the distance,
yeah,
it's like you still feel like you're in this happy little bumblebee world or this water world. And so I think it was like this perfect balance between what Sunshine tried to do and completely separating the worlds, where it's you're in a totally separate world. You're not really that connected to the rest of the map outside of when you go outside and you're in this world map. So I thought that this game did the best job of connecting everything. And that space aesthetic alone is so visually stunning so pleasing that I didn't ever want to leave it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Tired of beaches. Like, 64 was fine jumping into pictures. But I think that this perfectly captured, yes, you're in galaxies.
Well, especially...
And
especially...
you visit these fully realized worlds.
Yeah, I mean, especially like when you get into like the red stars and then you travel into other areas. I mean, when you see Mario flying around and the camera just like goes around Mario, you just see the scope of like the environment. You're just like, wow.
And that's never not fun, which is
exactly. It's
not
never
really playing,
mm-hmm.
but it's still just as enjoyable as if you were.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is great about this game? I think that this game might have the best soundtrack.
And you see, and it does a lot of fan service too. I mean, there's soundtracks from the classic Mario games that comes back into Galaxy.
Well, the thing about the soundtrack is they actually composed, if I'm not mistaken, 3 or 4 different versions of the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Because they weren't entirely sure what kind of sound they wanted. And I was actually reading up on this, and apparently they initially pitched some sort of like Latin vibe. The soundtrack is actually composed by 50 people. It's a 50-player symphony orchestra. And there's a double soundtrack that they released. The original soundtrack, if I remember correctly, was only released on Club Nintendo at first.
Yeah,
and then it was only,
only
years later they released it. And then they released a double CD. But there's like 52 tracks. And it is some of the best music. Like, there are times where it reminds me of some of my favorite sci-fi movies, like mm-hmm. Back to the Future or Star Wars. Just like the music in this game is amazing. And I still to this day cannot believe how amazing the controls are. Before I ever played Super Mario Galaxy, I was like, oh my god, I'm going to have to play a Mario platformer with like a nunchuck and a Wii remote. I was like, are you kidding? Mm-hmm. I was like, are you kidding? Dude, it's so easy to control Mario. It's easier to control him in Galaxy than in Mario 64, because even doing like a long jump or a backflip and or anything, mm-hmm. like doing a backflip in 64, I mean, you have to get used to it. You have to get used to controls, period, because you're trying to do a backflip and all of a sudden you do like a long jump or what have you. But here, it's just so smooth. It's so easy. I love how it incorporates the Wii remote, but it's not
it's not
a gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel forced on you. That's one thing too.
Plus, there's the extra like the star bits.
Yeah,
like almost for no reason, you're just like collecting star bits with the Wiimote. This is like an added mini game during the rest of the actual game.
Well, actually, the star bits do unlock secret levels. Luma will unlock a few bonus levels for you if you get enough star bits, and also it gives you free one ups, right? Mm-hmm. Free extra lives.
Yeah,
but the controls, it's just like I can't get over how amazing the controls are. I mean, just like the idea that Mario can have a spin attack now and all you have to do is shake your controller.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to destroy an enemy. And also, if you use the spin attack, I think if you use the spin attack, you'll get one of the star crystals. But if you stomp on the enemy, you'll get the coin. If you're injured, you're going to want the coins. You're going to stomp on an enemy. But if you just want the extra stars because you want to get like an extra free life and or you want to open up one of these secret levels, then you use a spin attack. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah, but I just can't get over how they took what is essentially two controllers that connect mm-hmm. and somehow made it easier to control Super Mario in a platformer game, which is what he's known for because he's the king of platformers. Like, I honestly think it's easier to control Super Mario in this game than in any other game. I just love it. I love the fact that I just like love how relaxed I feel holding these two controllers. Like, it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like it doesn't take very long to get used to. It takes like maybe like 2 minutes and that's it. And you get that, you do get the opening bit, which is part of the prologue, which you have to sort of like quickly get accustomed to the controls. Like, mm-hmm. they're very smart, Nintendo. And like, there's this one level where Mario sort of, he doesn't turn into like a giant springboard, but he sort of gets like the springboard wraps around him. So it's sort of like a power-up slash costume. Yeah. And the way the level is designed is you have to jump a certain height to like an arrow before moving on and playing the level. So the idea is that they wanted to make sure that the player would at least know how to do like a high jump using a springboard before jumping into the level, because if not, then they would just die. You know, mm-hmm. it's a typical Nintendo thing. Like, you make sure that the player understands the controls and the movements and the abilities of the character before he jumps full on into a stage, because then he's just going to lose an extra life and get frustrated. Like, little things like that Nintendo does so well. They perfect in this game, like perfect. Like, I'm using the word perfection here because I can't see a fault or a flaw in this game. I think this is one of the greatest games ever. Not just one of the greatest Super Mario games, not just one of the greatest platformer games, one of the greatest games, period, no matter what genre, no matter what system, no matter what company. I think it's got to be on our top five when we talk about our top five in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I did not know this. Maybe you guys did. But it was created by Nintendo EAD Tokyo Studio, whose first project was Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. So they made Donkey Kong Jungle Beat before making Super Mario Galaxy.
And it's a very natural progression right there.
Yeah. And Jungle Beat was also a flop.
Yeah.
So they produced a flop for Nintendo and then somehow got control to make the first Super Mario game for the Wii, which is like their number one selling console of all time. And somehow they ended up making one of the greatest platformers ever. It's like, well, amazing.
You know what? Which is quite amazing, though. I mean, you go from the bottom all the way to the top like that.
Hey, Jungle Beat's a fun game.
Yeah. It's a discussion for another time, I guess.
Party game. That's what NX is.
Like, bongo drums?
It's gonna be like the 3D visor, like just like the ugly red tripod stand from Virtual Boy, but just like strapped to your face, but the controller's just the bongo drum.
And then you have to wear the power glove to hit on the bongo drum.
Yeah. With the power glove. I'd buy it too.
So Super Mario Galaxy has, I think, 40 different galaxies.
Yeah.
Each contains like several challenges, courses, levels, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember the name of your favorite galaxy? Because I don't know if you played it recently. Like, I just been replaying this game all week long.
No, I don't think I could nail down just one favorite galaxy ever any playthrough. Like, it says something that every single time I got to a new world, I was all of a sudden all about what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think not only are the controls flawlessly developed, I think that this is the closest Nintendo's ever gotten to flawless level design. Like, not only is every single mechanic within the game just like perfectly realized, but just every single idea they had was pure fun. Mm-hmm. Like, from the solid platforming to giving Mario like this, like anytime he's orbiting a planet, mm-hmm. like you can run and jump and you start to like orbit a small planet. It's like thrilling and fun, and like almost like you're right, Ricky. It's kind of terrifying when you're like, am I just gonna like fly out into space and die? Like, they wouldn't do that to me, right? But it's just like everything that they shaped around this like theme of galaxies is pure fun. And mm-hmm. I don't remember a level where I was ever any bit annoyed or just ready to move on. Like every time they threw something my way, like the spring, mm-hmm. I was just having a ton of fun doing like the high jump with the spring over and over and over.
Oh my God, now I remember what it's called. It's called the spring mushroom. Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
But there's also like, you know, I guess you would call them sort of bonus games. Like they're small challenges, but there's one where you have to ride this giant mantra.
That was so cool. That was nice.
It's awesome.
The gameplay is always refreshing.
Yeah, it's because each and every single level is so different than the previous. It's like last week, your friend Ryan was asking, like, what's the difference between Galaxy and Sunshine? I'm like, well, Sunshine takes place on an island. Galaxy takes place across the universe. Like, and each and every single one of these galaxies is completely different. Like, just to go over the list here really quick, I'm not going to name them all because there's too many to name, but, like, one of my personal favorites is Dusty Dune Galaxy, which is basically a desert. Mm. And then you have, like, Bowser's Dark Batter Plant, which is an amazing level in itself. You have Bubble Breeze Galaxy, which is very similar to Sunshine because it takes place like on a beach, mm-hmm. With Beach Bowl Galaxy. But then you also have Toy Time Galaxy, which is fantastic. Love it. You have, of course, the Lava Reactor, which is basically like being inside a volcano. Like the mm-hmm. variety is everywhere. Freeze Flame Galaxy, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Gusty Garden Galaxy. I mean, God, like, there is just so much to do in this game. My favorite obstacles or courses are when you're playing Mario and all of a sudden you get to this area and forget about gravity. It does not exist, right? It's gone. And so there's sort of like these arrows that will point up or down. And if they point down, it means you're going to fall downwards. But if they point up, it means you're going to float upwards, right? Because that's mm-hmm. the way gravity is controlled. And so you have to make your way through the level without falling into a bottomless pit. Like, that level, or those levels, I should say, are, like, some of my favorite levels in any Mario game. I love them.
Anytime there was a level where they were kind of prioritizing speed, and it's like, there's a lot of levels that were, like, he's running around on, like, generator-looking spinny things, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, the glass ball?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, not in the ball.
Those the generator awesome. Spinny thingy?
No, they're just yeah. like giant like space stations where you're just on the outside. Sometimes you can break inside of them.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were talking about the giant glass ball. Like, there's one course where
it's like a golf course. But
yeah,
not...
it's a golf course. Exactly. So you hop on this yeah. sort of like glass golf ball, and you have to steer this giant ball through the mini putt. Course to get to the very end
with the Wiimote. That's fine.
Yeah, which was like super monkey ball in some way.
Yeah,
and there's also one where you go into a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
You have to float around the stage, and you use the Wii remote in order to sort of blow the wind in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful because if your bubble hits this creature that has sort of like spikes on its side, of course the bubble will break and you'll fall into the like lava pit.
Yeah. And those ones are fun and really unique. They sound gimmicky, but they're not at all, which is surprising. No, but anytime it's like a level that's like you're hopping from planet to planet and you're mm-hmm. jumping on these little space stations and you can kind of just fly as fast as you want to, like forgetting any consequences, I think that's when I was having the most fun, especially when you can really, really feel the effects of all the like the low feeling gravity and just like you're spinning upside down and you're like on the verge of dizzy, but it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I think the game truly shines.
I think all around the game really shines. I mean, it's like we just named all kinds of gameplay mechanics in Super Mario Galaxy, but it's like amazingly, this is only one game. So I think it just speaks to how great this video game really is.
In fact, it's so great. I think we need to stop right here, right now. And induct it into the N-Express Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, we got to talk about that because we're approaching episode 25. And I'm okay with putting Super Mario Galaxy into the Hall of Fame. But I think in episode 25, we've got to look back at all the games we've reviewed in the first 25 episodes of the show, or I guess the first 24.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to make a big, giant list. So.
Yeah, we need an actual site dedicated just to the Hall of Fame. That sounds good.
So I think that this game was the 8th best selling Wii game worldwide. And I'm just like, 8th spot? Like, what? Like, of course, Wii Sports beat it out, right? Because I came with the console. Mm-hmm. But what beat out Super Mario Galaxy? This game's incredible. It should have been like number one. Like, I guess Brawl, maybe? Not Brawl.
No More Heroes?
No. No, probably like Mario Kart.
Yeah, Mario Kart.
Probably.
Quite possibly Brawl. Maybe 2. Maybe Super Mario Galaxy 2 beat it.
Yeah. It's quite possible. But either way, like, this Super Mario Galaxy won, like, a ton of awards.
And very rightly so. I think this game is near flawless. In fact, I think it is flawless. Like, I had zero problems ever playing this game. And I think that this is the definition of, like, a 10 out of 10, a 4 out of 4 stars. This is, like, the game to beat.
I agree.
Totally agree. Super Mario Galaxy, one of the greatest games ever made. If you disagree, I dare you to email us.
Yeah.
Double dog dare you.
Awesome. So I think we're going to take a brief break now that Super Mario Galaxy has been properly supported. We'll be right back from break, and then we will talk about one of the greatest indie hits that we've had in a while, Runbo. So, Super Mario Galaxy is a great game. It is super colorful. And you know what else is colorful?
What?
Runbo. Runbo is really colorful.
Gee.
In fact, I would say rainbow's almost in the name of the game.
Wait,
you know, I kind of feel bad we are reviewing Runbo at the very end of the show, because, like, of course, like, our main event is dedicated to Super Mario Galaxy, but I kind of feel like, you know, this game needs a lot more love because it's getting, like, critical acclaim, but I don't think it's selling as well as it should be. And this is one of the best party games in quite some time. In fact, I will say it's a much better party game than Mario Party 10, okay?
It's also a better party game than Super Mario Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because, of course, you can play up to 9 players. Up to 9 players race against each other as platforms and obstacles appear and disappear when the background changes with colors. It's pretty awesome, and it's a lot of fun, a ton of fun, especially if you're playing with a bunch of people in your living room. I haven't tried the online mode. I'm not really the kind of guy who likes to play online, you know, and despite the fact that here you can't listen to people swear and bitch at you because, of course, there's no voice chat, that's kind of cool, but at the same time, I'm like, it's not as fun as playing with someone who's actually standing next to you in your living room. And so I'm kind of curious to see what it's like to play online, but I got to tell you, like, this game is a must-have if you have a Wii U. Like, there's no reason not to buy this game because it's gonna be one of those games that you're gonna whip out when your friends come over, just like you would Super Smash.
Yeah, it's even more casual than Smash, though, because the controls are so beautifully simplistic. It's all centered around platforming. You're just running and jumping, and doing extended jumps. That's it. With that, like, and can play this. Absolutely anyone can. And it's so easy to pick up. The concept is so novel and yet so simple that it works for anyone.
And you're not lying. Like, the controls are honestly 2 buttons and the analog stick.
That's it. Pad. 2 buttons.
Yeah. This had me very surprised. Okay. The thing about this game is there is more than, I think, 5 different types of modes you can play. So there's, like, basic run mode, there's King of the Hill, there's Step into the Arena mode, there's Color Master, and there's Adventure mode, and what was the 6th? Behemoth?
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called?
Behemoth, yeah.
Which I gave up on because it was just, like, way too hard. So that mode is, like, super hard. You have to be, like, a really, really skilled player, because if you die, it starts you right back at the beginning of the level. So it's for skilled players. But the modes are completely different. Like, King of the Hill is basically what it sounds like. It's King of the Hill, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know, you want sort of like a change of pace, you can go and play a mode like King of the Hill. But then there's like Color Master, which is a lot of fun. Because with Color Master, the person that's holding the gamepad plays against everyone else. So it's like Bowser mode in Mario Party 10. You're against everyone else. And if you have the gamepad, it's so much fun to trick, trap, and destroy your opponents. Like, yeah. So much fun. I love it. I love Color Master.
I think it's worth mentioning that no one has seemed to mastered asymmetrical play except for like a few instances. Like, I think the way underappreciated Nintendo Land has some brilliant party games that are asymmetrical like this. And then like Zombie U had a really, really interesting asymmetrical gamepad multiplayer mode with you and one friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty cool. That was pretty fun. No one ever talks about that because no one ever did it. But this is the best outside of like, this is sounds mean, but this is better than Evolve, which was totally centered around asymmetrical play, like a whole bunch of people versus a monster. This works so much better than that because of this gamepad. Like, Evolve's fun,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, like, the player base was so wonky, like, so many people were so far ahead. And then, like, if you understood the game better, then it was just broken right away. Mm-hmm. But this is just, like, one of those really, really fun, like, you want to be mad at the person that has the gamepad and you want to hate them.
But you're all in the same, you guys are all in the same level.
Yeah.
And you can't really argue about that.
It's funny and it's enjoyable. Like, even if you lose, it's fun. I don't think it's, like, as friendship-crushing as the Blue Shell, though.
I don't think it's as rage-inducing as playing even, like, Smash, you know? And, like, complaining that someone's spamming a move and get all frustrated because they keep on doing their down B or something. The best thing about this game, though, I think we can all agree, is the look of the game, because it's not just the colors, but the overall art design is inspired from old Saul Bass credit sequences. So if you don't know who Saul Bass is, he's one of my favorites. So Saul Bass basically designed like the greatest title sequences for movies, like everything from Alfred Hitchcock movies to James Bond movies. So if you haven't seen a Saul Bass title sequence, go on YouTube after you're finished listening to this podcast and type in Saul Bass, and you'll see what I mean. You'll see how the look of this game is inspired and influenced because of Saul Bass credit sequences in the past.
If you picture, like, for a very relevant reference, like, that's exactly what Pixar was going with The Incredibles in their credit sequence.
Yeah.
It's just this entire era of, it was, like, almost exclusive to espionage movies.
Yeah, well, he used it a lot for Hitchcock films, and of course, James Bond. And they always had some really cool, funky jazz song playing in the background. I love Saul Bass credits, totally. There's like, I actually at one point had a Tumblr account, and it was designed like a Saul Bass credit sequence. It was amazing.
I mean, still, they're so rad to this day.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that a game developer would be like, I want a game that's all that. We have like cell shading.
Totally. Which,
like, some try to go for, like, something very similar. Like, No More Heroes did a lot of this, sort of, like, playing with the color and cutting colors and shading and stuff. But I love that everyone in this game is, they, like, are these little cartoony cutouts of people that look like they belong in a credit sequence.
Perfect. There is one downside to Rumble. For me, it's not so much of an issue because I have so many controllers. But, you know, like, I have my controllers for my Wii. So I have, like, two Wii controllers. I have my Pro controller. I have two classic Pro controllers. I have the gamepad, and I think that's it. So I have, like, I think I just named 8 controllers. So I'm still missing one if I want to play all 9 players. But, you know, if you want to play all 9 players, you're going to need, like, multiple controllers, which is good if your friends also own a Wii U and or a Wii, so they can bring over the controllers. But, of course, yeah, you can play 9 players, but you do need the controllers. But the good news is you can use nunchucks, classic controllers, Pro controllers, gamepad, Wii remotes, you name it.
Does the GameCube controller work?
I don't know.
You'd have to get the adapter. No,
I have the adapter, so I should just go. The adapter. Okay. I should just go to the next room and find out if it does work.
Yeah,
you should try it.
Actually, you need to get an adapter because, you know, at one point it was sold out everywhere and people were scalping it for like $120 on like eBay. well, they re-released the game adapter, so I need to go buy one, because I still have like four. I don't know where my GameCube is. I know my nephews have it, but I still have like four GameCube controllers sitting right next to my Wii U.
Yeah, I had the foresight to get the Smash Bros. Set with the adapter and a controller.
Yeah, I think this is like, you know, a fantastic game. I think it's one of the best indie games on the Wii U, and how could we forget to mention
all the characters?
Characters, yes, the unlockable characters.
Do you have a list? Because it's massive.
Well,
Guacamelee.
The game itself has its own characters made just for the game, but yeah, there are some pretty exciting additions for fans, including Shovel Knight, Rusty from Steam World Dig, Max from Mutant Muds. Who am I forgetting here? There's so many. There's like nine, I think.
Guacamelee.
Characters from Guacamelee.
Yeah. So there's like, it's basically like, it'll be like the all-stars for indie games. Put into like one party game, just the way like Smash has like the Nintendo All-Star roster put into like a fighting game.
And that's what's so fun about it, is not only is it a brilliant new addition to like indie games and a brilliant addition to party games like Smash Bros, but it also is a celebration of indie games, and it really like reverently puts all these characters that they clearly like these games just as much as we do. So they include the characters in their game. I think that's not only generous, like free advertising, basically. I'm guessing there was some money involved, but advertising, it's supporting other developers, but it's just fun for everyone playing the game. Like, of course you're going to go straight for Shovel Knight or Max from Mutant Muds. Like, it's fun to be those characters outside of their game.
Yeah,
it's like not a needed addition, but it's just another level of fun. It's kind of like I did not see that many game modes coming. Like, that surprised me a lot. I thought the game would be a lot more simple than that. So that there's that many game modes, that was cool. But there are so many different characters. Like, sure, they're all basically the same, but you got to go looking as cool as possible, right?
Yeah, that's and true. Actually, we should actually just make something very clear. Like, this is a party game, but you don't necessarily have to play with a group of people. Like, you can play single mode. And single mode is actually a ton of fun. And there's like 100 levels laid out for single mode player.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of stuff that you can do in this game. And, you know, it's like a nice balance between Super Meat Boy and Runner 2. Because it's not as challenging as some of those games, or as frustrating, or as hardcore. It's sort of like, I don't know how to explain it, but it strikes this nice balance where I think just about anyone can play this game and enjoy it. You might not be as good of a player as your friend, but it's a very simple game. Again, like, you know, two button controls. It's colorful. It's got a great soundtrack. It's a ton of fun. And it's one of the best party games out right now.
Yeah. So go ahead. And if you own a Wii U, go out and get Runbo. It's definitely worth the price tag. I think that'll do it for our show this week. Aaron, thank you so much for being with us again. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at TheCharmless6, and you can find me hosting our gaming podcast at ftwgamingpodcast.com.
Awesome. Ricky D, where can we find you?
You can find me and us on Facebook. Join the NXpress Nintendo Podcast Facebook page. I'm going to attach a link with this very post. I'm not really on Twitter anymore, but I am on Tumblr. If you are on Facebook, you can always add me as a friend as well. You can find all my contact information at popoptic.com. That's popoptiq.com. It is our new beautiful website. Do check it out, popoptic.com.
So you can also find me on Twitter at the Freemason, MAISON. You can find me on popoptic.com in the game section. You can also find my other podcast dedicated to Destiny, This Podcast Came from the Moon, which if you're into that, go listen to that. It's a ton of fun. Other than that, we will be around on popoptic.com and on our new Facebook page. So we will talk to you guys next week for a continuation of our soon-to-be-wrapped-up Mario Madness extravaganza. I don't even know what we're calling it. Our 30th anniversary celebration of Mario. Talk to you next week.
outlined to you in your office, we would be very happy to have the chance of handling your new 12-inch long playing records, and I would like to see you again in your office early next week.